from Greater Sandton and beyond. Get ready for the Sandton Times Hour
with your host,
Alexander.
That's right, it's the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and is always available as a podcast on Apple, Google and Spotify. I'm Alexander Leibner, this is edition 113. It's week 19 of 2023 and we are well into May. If you want to get in touch, you can email editor@sandtontimes.co.za or you can connect on social media at Sandton Times or visit the website www.sandtontimes.co.za. And as always, you're free to send through your questions, your comments, your feedback, your input. You're part of the conversation and you're part of the Sandton Times Hour Nation. As you listen in from across Gauteng, South Africa and everywhere else in the world, both on radio and of course as a podcast community, I'm happy to report that all is well in Sandton Land. And Vincenzo behind the control desk again, pressing the buttons. And looks like we're done with the public holidays for now, Vincenzo. Definitely the long weekends. That's a thing of the past for a bit. But I know there's a couple of public holidays still left. And then it's December. That's the other big holiday and breaks season. If you're listening live on Mix 93.8 and not on the podcast, well, you can use the WhatsApp line. It's open 0848220938, 0848220938. We've got some great guests again for you this week, as always. So let's get straight into what we've got lined up for this week. Coming up on this week's show, he's one of South Africa's most well-known comedians who over the past few years went off to explore academia and business. He's not only back with comedy, but he's also back with a new course on getting you to speak up and speak better. More of that in a minute. Then if you enjoy eating out, you might have already had a cocktail or tapas at one of these eateries, but I'll be catching up with one of the owners to get some more insight into these popular Rosebank restaurants. Next, he's been a popular keynote speaker and successful author in South Africa, and I hadn't heard from him in quite some time. Well, I'm happy to report I've tracked him down to the other side of the world for an update. So stay tuned for that. And finally, if you're into doing some good things and keeping hope alive, well, you'll want to stick around for my final guest in the hour. This and more is coming up shortly. There's no headlines for this week as there's lots to get through. But as always, we'll get the hour going with a bit of music.
Show some love.
Subscribe. Share.
Leave a review and rating for the Sandton Times Hour
on your favorite podcast app now.
Topical news.
My fellow South Africans.
Big names.
I love that.
The hottest entertainment.
I'll be back soon. Yeah, I'll call you myself.
And everything in between.
What an honor. I was born in Sandton, grew up in Sandton, so here I am.
This is the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with Bob Sinclair and featuring Gary Pine with that hit song Love Generation. Taking us into our first interview for this hour, and I'm so thrilled to be connecting with him again. We met many, many years ago, I think when I first started in media, which was probably a good 24 years ago. He was a growing and very successful South African comedian at the time. I mean, he was touring stages all around the world, and he then took a bit of a detour, went into business, went into academia, and I'm so thrilled to be reconnecting with him again now. He is John Flismus, and it's good to have you on the Sandton Times Hour.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
John, tell us a little bit more about this transition. I mean, before we get into the meat of our conversation today, I mean, a lot of people still remember you as being one of South Africa's most outspoken, funniest comedians. I mean, you were doing headline shows all over the place. And then you kind of took a bit of a detour and you kind of went into a different space.
Yeah, I did. I did. It's interesting. It's coming full circle. I did take a break from comedy. I thought that might be the problem. And then I realized that I was the problem. So I did some personal work and I'm still doing it. But I might go back to comedy. Actually, I did need to take some time to take my studies a bit more seriously and finish my first degree. And that's led me to believe that maybe I need to do another one. And interestingly, I did some comedy a little while ago for Comedy Central and it went really well. I really missed it. And so what we might see is another show later in the year, but in a more balanced way. I thought that comedy might be unhealthy for me, Perhaps not. I think a balance of what I'm doing now, teaching academics, some other business stuff. But I really miss comedy, so I'm probably going to go back.
Well, it's an interesting thing to do because I think most people spend their entire life trying to find something that they're really good at. And in your instance, you found something that you were really good at and then decided, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go do something else. And that must be quite an interesting decision to make.
Yeah, I think the idea was that a lot of reflection happened around the time that my dad was very sick and then subsequently died. I watched my dad fail physically, and I started to wonder whether it was enough to be one thing in a lifetime on a deep level. That was the one thing. And the other thing was that my dad deferred some of his own dreams in his lifetime. And by the time he got back to them, because the idea was he would work, and then when he retired, he would go back to his dream. And it was a creative thing. He was a good writer, my dad, a very good writer. But he never got a chance to publish anything. And by the time he got back to it, he was literally too tired. He just had worked himself like so hard that he just didn't get back there. And so I felt like part of my sort of second chapter would be to explore that. And what it led me to was more personal work. It wasn't around comedy as such. It's just that I think I was doing comedy on quite a weak personal base, to be quite honest. Part of the work that you will have done and you are doing and you're finishing now, will, personal development's quite big in the school that we are going through or being through. And that led me to a few realizations. It was really good reflection on myself. But then I realized I needed to do some more rigorous stuff, some more aggressive kind of self, I suppose, development and get in the ring with myself a bit more. Some good people kind of led me to that place. So I did that, and I'm coming out of the other side of quite a tough year, just over a year of this process, and it's been really good. And now there's a slightly more generous approach to myself, and I think comedy does make me happy. How I was doing it maybe wasn't great, but now I'm have maybe a more balanced approach. I'm starting to understand what balance really means, but it's only at the age of 50 that I'm really kind of understanding what that means. I'm looking forward to going back, but this new sort of avenue of finding out who I am beyond the comedian, that's been really, really rewarding, actually.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you've come up with in terms of the comedy gig, and I'm quite keen to see how that's evolved or how that's changed or what you're bringing to the stage. And that's a very fascinating personal insight there, and I thank you for sharing that, because it's not something that people would sort of generally just sort of, open up and share with everyone. And I think a lot of people probably have gone through a very similar experience over lockdown and during COVID, where they probably realized that, life's so short and maybe there is something that I haven't explored that I still need to do, that I want to do, and that I need to make a plan to do. And I think that's awesome. But talking about Henley, I mean, you just sort of briefly touched on it there. We are both Henley Africa alumni. And you're more deeply involved with Henley than I am. I'm a student at the moment. You're kind of sitting almost on the other side now. And you're going to be offering a course called Speak Up, applying a lot of what you've learned, what you've been good at, into a course for people who are not great at speaking, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think it's for anyone who needs to talk to other people. I call it talking to strangers. It's important if we are taught from birth not to talk to strangers, which is nonsense, because if we did that, we'd all be xenophobic lunatics. In fact, some of us are. And I don't mean, like fringe, polarized human beings. I think generally as a species, you become more terrified of strangers because we now have trigger warnings for eating nuts. We are intolerant of dairy, never mind strangers. So I realized that in my life and in my business, I haven't just done comedy. I mean, I've pitched a lot and I've presented a lot and I've done lots of kind of really nice sponsorship deals for other people and projects. I've pitched creative ideas, TV shows, films, and I'm good at that. So what I wanted to understand was, and it was part of my studies actually, is this idea of trust and perception and identity. In fact, my thesis was about the interplay of those three concepts. But I thought there are a lot of courses that tell people how to like face the right way, picture everyone naked. These are all terribly bad ideas, I think, because I've done a lot of public talking and in lots of different contexts and countries and cultures and for different reasons. And ultimately what I wanted to do was get to the kind of, I'm going to use a word now that I don't like, but I'm going to use it, but the meta of presenting. So what's under the hood? I was my friend Barry Van Sale, who is also a colleague, and we've spoken together in Munich, and we've done stuff in Lagos, and we've done stuff in South Africa. Barry's a phenomenal drummer, for anyone who doesn't know. He's a world famous drummer. Barry showed me that there's a way to look underneath. He does as a really, really like world-class drummer. And as a comic, you know, we share something around timing. We share something around an instinct for rhythm. It's just that mine is words and the gaps between words, and Barry's is like, you know, actual beats. But we started to understand that there was something underneath that. And so when Barry said to me, like, could you talk to the alumni for an hour about public speaking? I thought, wow, no, it's impossible. I don't know what to tell them. And then he said, but let's make it even more challenging. Can you do 3 20-minute like sections? This typical drummer, you know, he's broken everything into beats. There's a connection, because when he said that, it unlocked something. And then I was like, wow, this guy is onto something. If we did 20 distilled minutes at a time, it really is a masterclass, because it breaks it down into like the absolute essence. So if I only had like 3 20-minute sections, talk to people, what would I do? And so I had that kind of challenge. And it's something I teach at Henley, is creativity doesn't require freedom. It actually requires extreme constraint. If you look at history and you look at, like, you know, where human beings have become the most creative, it's where they're under incredible constraint. So you don't actually give people freedom. You give them a tight brief. And so he did that. And what came out was super cool. So I had this hour where I just gave the essence. And then he said, well, why don't we expand it? Give each section an hour, and then let's embed some exercises, because someone else I work with at Henley is Dr. Puleng Makhwadibe. And Puleng taught me how to always draw the theory into the practical world. You know, her PhD is on creative project management. And she showed me how to embed knowledge. I've talked with Puleng a long time and at Henley, and we have a very intuitive partnership when we teach. So often she'll be talking and I'll be adapting my deck based on what she's adapted and moved the class somewhere else. And then I can adapt to her. So between these kind of academic friendships, this 3-hour course was born. And we did the first one in Johannesburg and then at the very nice Henley campus in Cape Town, and got really good feedback. And so this is my first standalone course with Henley. I'm really excited because we've had great feedback. They want to do more already. And people generally responded really well to a thing which is not just a course where I speak to people, but we generate the experience together. I do quite a lot of my own performance in the workshop. I get to show people how we draw material from the audience, how we formulate relationships. And I do that by some stuff that I do before we start. And then I show how I've connected to people already before we begin. Lots of comedy in the thing, which is nice for me because I get to perform. I get to draw material from the audience. And then I start to talk about, why is it that humans need to code information into stories? So I show that neurologically with the audience. We code some information together as stories. The audience gets to generate some stories. And then I show them how a story is really just what a presentation is. We find an audience in a particular state before we introduce new information. We resonate with them to reassure them that we understand their story. We give them the confidence of me knowing what my story is. Who am I? And then we introduce the novelty. So the new story gets introduced, but not as a radical change, but rather as a gentle introduction coded into their story, and then how we shift the narrative throughout the presentation. So when we leave that audience, they're in a different place from where we found them. But often we don't consider where the audience is in the beginning. We just want to take them somewhere new. And often that's a mistake. So the course is pretty, there's a lot to it.
All right, John, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then more from John Flismas right after this.
The best of talk and music in 1 hour. This is the Santon Times Hour. The best of Santon and beyond.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
It is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good podcast platforms. And before the break, I started a conversation with well-known South African comedian John Flissmus. And we continue the conversation right now. I'm listening to this as somebody who's often spoken to an audience. And I'm thinking, well, initially I thought, okay, well, this is maybe a course for somebody who's maybe never really spoken in front of people, but nervous, needs a bit of a guideline. But this really also sounds like something for people who do think that they know how to address an audience and maybe need a refresher or maybe just need a whole new framework to maybe reconsider their presentations or their talks or whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so what I've tried to do is really distill, I mean, thousands and thousands of hours of talking to people all over the place and give people what's necessary. You know, there are certain deep genetic memories that get triggered when we move from the audience, which is where most people start. And then that transition from the audience to the point of focus, there's an incredible genetic memory that gets unlocked. And that's really from leaving the safety of the herd and suddenly falling under the gaze of a predator. I don't care who the person is. On some level, your chemistry changes. And once you start to understand what that chemical change is, you can start to ride that chemical advantage. You don't have to be debilitated by it because, you know, there are certain things that your adrenaline and other drugs do to your body that give you limited options, but they also give you hyper focus and they give you hyper performance if you understand what's going on. And often it's the things you can't do in a presentation, but flight or freeze. It's the gap between your inability to choose one of those options and the incredible urge to choose one of those options. That gap is where anxiety lies. So we dive quite deep into how to not fight your genetic response to being separated from the crowd, but rather to use it to your advantage. How does a comedian become so hyper-focused, you know, and so hypersensitive in a good way to a huge crowd that they've never met before? And the truth is, I haven't met them because I'm often, there's a barrier between us. There's a fourth wall. That wall is invisible, but it exists. I'm on the stage and they're in the audience. So we're never going to meet, yet somehow we meet. And there's this kind of invisible tension between us. So we talk a bit about that as well. So there's quite a lot of, like, you just won't get this from, like, you know, some theoretical expert on this. You've got to talk a lot to a lot of different people. You've got to be afraid. You've got to be interrupted. You've got to be, I have my own history of, you know, like substance abuse and like all of those things, addiction. So I've been in many altered states in front of people and found my way through, sometimes failed dismally. Sometimes there were paramedics or, you know, I've had an IV line backstage at certain points just to keep me going. But so like I've been through a lot of different things. And so I've just tried very hard to deliver on the promise of a masterclass, because this is what I've been doing from the age of 19 and I'm 50.
Well, Jonathan, you're looking great at 50 if I look at you, and it's so exciting to hear about this new venture and this new adventure that you're going on. And if you want to join the next intake of John's, masterclass, it's 3 hours. It's called Speak Up. It's through Henley Africa. Well, we're going to put all the details up on the Santon Times website. Go on there, follow the link, read up on additional details around this particular course and, you know, the costings, and you can also register there and show your interest. And I think it's going to be unbelievably valuable. I think I'm actually going to make a point of actually attending this, because I think this could really add some additional dimension also to, you know, some people who might be more comfortable with speaking. But if you're not comfortable with speaking at all, this might also be something for you. And John Flissmus, I thank you for making the time to chat to me on the Santon Times Hour.
Thank you, sir. It's nice to see you again.
Awesome, John. It's the bottom of the Santon Times Hour. We're going to take a quick musical break and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
for more?
The Santon Times Hour continues.
It's the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with Somebody That I Used to Know by Kalisto and The High. Taking you into the second half of the Santon Times Hour, my name is Alexander Leipner. And if you listen to the show regularly, well, you know what happens now. We tell you all about where you can get all the information that you've heard on the show this week. So if there was something that you liked, if there's something that tweaked your interest and you want to get some more information, well, you go onto the website, santontimes.co.za. You check out the show notes and you get all the information that you need, phone numbers, email addresses, details of our guests and where to find their services, their establishments. And also, if you want to connect on social media, you can visit Santon Times on all social media platforms and feel free to engage there. You can use the hashtag Santon Times Hour. Now, there's a couple of new eateries in Rosebank, some of them a little bit more established than others, but they all form part of the Colada Club. Like, is it like Pina Colada, I would probably imagine. And joining me on the line is one of the owners, Gaz Hollywood. He looks after restaurants that you probably heard of, Proud Mary, Mama Samba, and of late, a new restaurant in Rosebank called Fugazi. So, Gaz, tell us a little bit more about your gastronomy journey. How long have you been into this?
I've been doing it for about 20 years. I was originally with Doppio Zero Group, Pizza Vino. Got a couple of other restaurants, as you might know, The Foundry and La Boqueria. And we came back to Rosebank a couple of years ago and we did Proud Mary in the Bank Hotel. And we opened Mama Samba in December last year. A couple of weeks ago, we just launched Gazi, which is our New York Italian inspired restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, you've found a really comfortable corner in Rosebank. I mean, you've sort of taken over a really nice spot on different sides, and you've really made a feast of these restaurants. I mean, you haven't just sort of opened up, put a couple of tables and an umbrella out and started serving sandwiches. I mean, each restaurant has got its own identity. It's got its own feel. Where do you get your inspiration from in terms of what these restaurants are going to serve and what the theme is going to be?
I mean, we started off with Proud Mary. We wanted to create a really cool modern eatery and wine bar in the heart of Rosebank. We opened it in the Bank Hotel. We wanted a really cool all-day eatery where guests from the hotel could come. Still seeing, but we've got a big business following too. We've got some offices, Workshop 17 in our building. And so after creating that, the opportunity came up with We Are Egg, which is a department store in Rosebank. And we came up to, you know, they approached us to come and open a unique concept within their space. And we thought about bringing a very cool Latin American restaurant, cocktail bar, social club environment. And we just thought that that's what Rosebank needed. So our team, you know, we conceptualized that. Yeah, and it's just been a great success the last couple of months. And from there, subsequently, we had another opportunity with Old Mutual that came up for another smaller location, opposite Mama Samba. And we then conceptualized Fugazi in that space, just with a need for something a little bit more family, you know, just everybody's little Italian diner. So that's what they came up with our team.
Amazing. Well, in the 2020s, it no longer seems like having a good menu and a good drinks menu is enough. You now have to do something for the eye, something for the camera. How are you finding the pressure of having to also design and develop a restaurant that also has to be visually appealing, that gets the Instagrammers and the TikTokers excited, as well as those who appreciate a good meal and something to drink?
We've always loved designing beautiful spaces. I think it's an incredibly important part of where restaurants have evolved. People want to go to beautiful spaces. They want to hang around in beautiful spaces, have unique food, cocktails, and they just want the whole environment to be something special and a real treat. So that's what we try to provide.
Yeah. And we've seen it. I mean, if you go onto Instagram now and you look at Mama Samba, at Proud Mary, and even now the new restaurant Fugazi, it is something for the eye. Both on the dish and also the surroundings are very important. And where to from here, Gaz? I mean, are there plans to kind of move outside of Rosebank to open up in different parts of Johannesburg or South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, we've built a big team. Over the past 3 years, we've built a staff complement of just north of 300 people. And that's how many people it takes to operate the operations in Rosebank. We definitely want to grow. We are looking for new areas. We want to grow organically, though, and make sure that we're going into the right areas with the right brands. But right now, it's just focusing on just getting the brands right in Rosebank 2 and just carrying on with the current success that we have.
Yeah, it's probably a wise move, building a strong base and then kind of seeing where the opportunities take you organically. And Gaz Hollywood, he's one of the owners of the Collada Club, which looks after Proud Mary, Mama Samba, and Fugazi. And if you get a chance, if you go to Rosebank, make an outing. I know I've had some breakfast at Proud Mary, which was really fantastic. And take your time. Don't rush it. And also, I can recommend the prawns at Mama Samba. If you haven't had those, go try those. Those are really fantastic. So Gaz, thank you so much for being on the Santon Times Hour.
Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
The best of Santon and beyond.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
It's the Santon Times Hour, and as always we do during this part of the show, we take a bit of a change of pace, and the name Douglas Kruger means something to you. He's written numerous books. He's a well-established speaker in South Africa, and I actually spoke to him last during lockdown, and it was actually, I think it was sort of the first month of lockdown. We had a long chat. He brought out an e-book about how to cope with the pandemic and COVID-19 and kind of where to from here, because a lot of businesses were kind of deciding, well, you know, where to? Where are we going? After 21 days, will this be over? Or will we be in this for a couple of weeks or months? And Douglas had put together a really nice little guide in terms of kind of some thoughts, some ideas, some ways to possibly sort of bridge this. And, you know, 2 years later, we were still at it, you know, having to get through the pandemic and COVID and obviously the knock-on effects of government locking down the country. And then I hadn't heard from Douglas in such a long time. And I wonder, where's he gone? What has he done? I mean, he was always very vocal on social media. And I thought, no, I'm going to try and track him down. And I have tracked him down and he joins me on the line right now. Douglas, where in the world are you?
You track me, Alex, to the far side of the world. I'm in the Northern Hemisphere on the beautiful little Channel Island of Jersey, which is part of Great Britain, but not part of the UK, but closer to France than to Britain. So that's the quick series of headlines.
Well, Douglas, you've summarized that really well, so we know exactly where you are now. And what takes you to Jersey? Have you moved? Have you relocated to Jersey?
Yes, we're not sure if it's going to be entirely permanent, but it's certainly the plan for now. What happened was my primary industry was speaking and training. And when the global governments conspired to shut down the world economies and try to make people poor, the training and speaking industry pretty much fell off the edge of a cliff. But at the same time as that, my wife, who works in financial services, received an email that honestly we thought was a scam. And it was a job interview for the Channel Islands. And she nevertheless very sort of, you know, cautiously and skeptically followed the whole process, and it turned out to be real. We'd never heard of the island of Jersey. We had to look it up on YouTube, and it was just this wonderful sort of confluence of things. My son at the time was 4 years old, so he was, you know, just about to start or going towards starting school. The speaking industry was gone. We looked at the island and we thought, well, that's lovely. Why not give it a shot? And now would be the time if we're ever going to do it. And we've been here now for nearly 2 years. It's been the most incredible, wonderful experience.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that, because I think people would be quite fascinated to hear what your part of the world is like. I mean, I'm assuming you don't have any load shedding at this point or any potholes. But apart apart from that, what's Jersey been like as a South African?
Well, you know, sure. We were back in South Africa a couple of weeks ago. So it's interesting just to see, you know, the sort of the contrast between the two. And the first and most obvious one is South Africa is massive and Jersey is tiny. The entire island has something like 110,000 people all told. So it's a small island, but it does have its own government, its own society and so forth. It falls under the crown of Great Britain, but not under the government of Great Britain. So it has its own government, which means it runs its own things. Some of the differences, I mean, it's a wonderful mix of incredibly first world. As you say, the power just never goes off. You never have to fight people at intersections. In fact, if anything, they are chronically polite. The problem goes the other way. Someone sort of walking on a pavement hints at looking at the other side of the road, and traffic screeches to a halt to allow them to go by. So they are actually sort of mortally polite. But yeah, it's been a wonderful experience. My first impression of the place was walking down tiny pavements with my four-year-old and traffic going by almost touching our elbows, and thinking, how do people live in such close quarters, in such small close proximity and small places? But it's charming. It just absolutely works. So yeah, you've got the very much first world, highly developed, fastest internet speeds in the world. You've got the high finance on one side of the island. The other side of the island is pretty much cows and potatoes, and it's a lovely mix.
Amazing. It sounds fascinating. It must be such an interesting change. But as you said, you were in the speaking industry. I mean, you were unbelievably busy before COVID and before the pandemic. You'd written a number of very successful books, very much in the business space, personal development space, finance, entrepreneurship. What are you doing now? Like, how do you even begin to find a new career or a new start?
Yeah.
Moving to the other side of the world?
Well, a very strange thing happened to me, and it really has turned out to be such a blessing, particularly, and I put this in inverted commas, given the sugar mama who is my wife. When I was about 8 years old, I picked up and read my first Stephen King novel. And my wife says that explains a lot about why I am the way I am today. And since then, the dream had been to write novels. And of course, I got involved in the speaking world and the business world, and I absolutely love it. I mean, and also the storytelling side of it. But what I had done was I put together my first little novel. And to my great surprise, Penguin actually accepted it. And that happened just about the same time as we began the move over to Jersey. And I thought, well, you know, I've got this rare opportunity where I don't have to be on a stage. I don't have to be writing business books. My wife has this wonderful offer, and we're going on the strength of her income. Why not keep writing novels? I'm now working on novel number 5, but number 2 is actually about to come out with Penguin. To my great astonishment, they seem happy to keep on receiving them and publishing them. So we'll see if that is a viable way forward.
Amazing. It's quite fascinating. And obviously now with Amazon and all these things, you can pretty much publish anywhere in the world or to the entire world, which is exciting. So
yes,
You've got a massive audience opportunity there as well. And what are the novels about? I mean, is it sort of murder mystery? Is it thrillers? What are we talking about here?
The first one was a great anomaly and an incredibly difficult one to explain because it's a bit of a literary book. My main character dies in the opening chapter. He's granted the opportunity to look back on his family at 3 different points in their progressing lives. And he doesn't like what he sees. And the question becomes, what can you do about it from there, given that you can't interrupt free will? So that one really is a strange and unusual little story. It's called The Man Who Never Was. Going forward, I think the tone is going to be quite different. The second book is closer to what you might call a Dean Koontz novel, which is somewhere in between horror and a sort of a hint of sci-fi. Number 2 comes out, I think, toward the end of next month, and it's called Character Scan. And I mean, very brief version of the story. A man invents a machine that is able to read the propensity for evil in other human beings. And at the same time as this, I have a poor young woman growing up in trailer parks in New Mexico who can do the same thing. And the question becomes, which one can catch a rising tyrant?
Listen, I mean, Douglas, it sounds like some really great stuff there. And as little as I know about publishing books, it's probably going to be one of those things where you have to bring out the first, the second, and the third, and you'll probably start seeing a progressive fan build up, people who enjoy your content, who enjoy your writing, who enjoy your storytelling. And I hope one of them is a massive success. I mean, if you're saying you're onto the fifth one, I mean, that is tremendous.
Yes, apparently that is the way that it works. And thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm working on number 5, but the publishing process is actually incredibly slow. So it takes me, say, 4 or 5 months, perhaps 6 months in total to put together a novel. Then you progress on to the next one and simply keep going, which is the right thing to do as a writer. But it can take a year and a half for each of those books to go through the editing and publishing process. So it's slow, it's tedious, but exactly as you suggest, usually around number 3 or 4, you start to develop a bit of a fan base and a following and so forth. And let's see if that happens with this one. That's the goal.
Well, Douglas, I wish you all the very best in this new adventure. And I think there's almost something a little bit poetic or sort of like novel in the fact that you're writing these books on an island in, you know, off the coast of England. I mean,
Alex, I wish I could show it to you. I mean, we stare out at these misty coasts with there's a castle sort of out at sea and the tide comes in around it. You know, you sit and you tell your little tales as the English mists come in. I mean, it's too fabulous for words. It really is. It's a writer's paradise.
It's spot on, man. And hopefully you also get it converted into a Netflix series or into a movie at some point. I mean, wouldn't that be great? But Douglas
Kruger... What's the phrase from your lips to God's ears?
Douglas Kruger, international speaker, now also predominantly an author on the island of Jersey. Thank you so much for joining us on the Santon Times Hour. It's been so great to catch up with you.
Wonderful pleasure to chat with you again. Thanks so much for your time.
We're going to take a quick musical break and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
from Greater Sandton to the rest of the world. This is the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with Wherever You Will Go by Kalisto. Taking us in to the final minutes of this week's hour. And as we get to those final minutes, I'm thrilled to be joined by Namrita Sivsankar. She's the CEO of Hope SA Foundation. And I'm thrilled that she's joining me on the Sandton Times Hour.
Hi, Alex. Thank you for having me.
Namrita, tell me a little bit more about this Hope SA Foundation. How did this come about?
So Hope SA started in the year 2000. And I've been in business all my life. But at the background of my businesses, I always did charity work because it's for me, it was, I think, my calling, my higher purpose. I knew I had to do something bigger than myself, bigger than just the mundane eat, live, die kind of scenario. And as a young girl, I knew I had a bigger purpose in life. And it was, that is where Hope SA was born in the year 2000. And I formally got into the NGO space full time in 2020.
Wow. I mean, it's a hell of an operation to look after. I mean, I think recently I saw on some of your social media, you were actually out in Turkey just after the earthquake there, bringing supplies and all kinds of necessities to Turkey.
Yes, we took a team to Turkey. So we had about 20 volunteers that came along with us, from medical to rescue workers. And that was a huge opportunity for us to, you know, do some work internationally. It was our first international trip, so we were not sure of what to expect. And I think everybody that was on board with us went there with the sole intention of going to help people there. And for me, that's a huge you know, it's a milestone for the NGO, as well as for people who've just left their homes in the middle of everything, not thinking about their safety, not thinking about, you know, anything else besides the mission is to go and see how best we can help people. So for me, that just shows the character of, you know, good people we have in this world. And there's many, many around, as well as the, you know, you get the bad, but you also get the good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's not something that's a straightforward exercise. I mean, you don't just go to the airport, buy an airline ticket and fly into a region like that. The logistics around that must be ridiculous.
Well, thankfully, we had the support of the Turkish Airlines and the Turkish ambassador as well. So they assisted us greatly, and we've had support on the ground from various government you know, departments that made sure we were safe and we were taken care of.
So what is the main focus of Hope SA? I mean, there's probably some guiding mantra or motto that you kind of focus on as the core that everything then basically revolves around.
So for me, it is about keeping hope alive. Hope is, I think, one of the last things we hang on to in any situation. You know, if we don't have hope, we've lost everything. So for me, it's about keeping hope alive in desperate times, in poor communities, in, you know, not only poor communities, but just all around us. And I believe, you know, it just takes one person at a time to start causing this domino effect. And you just start by helping one person at a time, and eventually you find you help a whole community out and a whole country out. So that's our motto.
What have been some of the most meaningful projects that you've been involved in? And are they normally sort of once off, or are these projects that you have as an ongoing thing throughout the year?
So we have ongoing projects. So we do daily food drives where we feed a minimum of 400 hot meals a day in Johannesburg. And we support community kitchens down in KZN as well, because I am from KZN. So for me to give back in the area, you know, it's quite important. And so I work nationally. And now where we can assist international, we will do that. So we feed 400 meals a day, hot meals, and we cook at an Indian restaurant called Dava Indian Restaurant in Norwood, where their support is to help us in preparing the meals before the restaurant opens. So food is distributed every morning at 10 o'clock and beneficiaries collect, or we just, you know, go out to communities and feed. And that's on an ongoing basis. And, you know, that's something that we always needing support and assistance for. And 3 years ago, I launched the Safer Women Drive, which focuses on gender-based violence. So every year we make these Safer Women care packs, which go out to shelters and also to the communities we work in, to the women. And in these care packs, we have educational material, reading material, something to make them feel special, sanitary pads included. And we hold talks and educational workshops on gender-based violence, on what's the process on getting help if you're in a situation where you've been abused or raped. So it's quite educational, as well as providing some kind of support for them. And going forward, my goal for the NGO this year is to open up a women's shelter and a shelter for children as well. And in time, a men's shelter as well. So we've got big plans around that. And most of our projects are needs driven. So when there's a need, and we don't just say, okay, we're only doing food and we're doing animals. But if there's a need and people need help, we will be there. We will be there to assist. The other project we worked on is, disaster relief. So we do that in a big way. And we provide access to clean water, water tanks, and disaster relief food, blankets, mattresses, whatever's needed, you know, baby supplies. We've been so proactive during the KZN unrest, the KZN floods, Soweto floods, Boksburg explosion. So there's quite a few projects we've been involved in.
Well, listen, I mean, it sounds like there's a hell of a lot going on. And I mean, obviously, I suppose yes, all the support you can get is probably highly welcome. And we're going to put all your details up on the santontimes.co.za.
Sure.
So if people want to get in touch, and I suppose on the one hand, you know, donations and those things are welcome. But I suppose also from by the sound of things, also if people have got, you know, actual items that they might want to contribute,
yes,
blankets or pillows or whatever it is, those are probably welcome as well.
100%. Like currently we are doing the winter warmth drive. So we distribute blankets and warm jackets and t-shirts and beanies, and with a cup of soup or a hot meal. So that is happening for the next 3 months. And we've already started that this past weekend. So people are welcome to donate items. You know, you can donate groceries towards the daily food drives or food hampers. And cash donations do help, because they also assist us in buying items in bulk, and you know, wherever the need is, it makes it easier. And there are various initiatives. So there is definitely a project that resonates with somebody on some level. So people are welcome to get in touch and just assist where you can.
Brilliant. Well, I know it's going to be a very bitterly cold winter, the way load shedding is going. So I think it'll probably be a more welcome project than ever before. Namrita Sivsankar, CEO of Hope SA Foundation, thank you so much for making your time on the Santa Times Hour to join me.
Thanks, Alex.
And that's it for another Santa Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and is always available as a podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. If you want to get in touch, you can email editor@santontimes.co.za or connect on social media @santontimes, or visit the website www.santontimes.co.za, and feel free to send through your questions or your comments or your input, your feedback. All of it is welcome. Thank you to our guests who made time to be on the show this week, as well as Vincenzo. Thank you for doing what you do every single week, and as well as everyone at the Santon Times and everyone at Mix 93.8. Thank you for listening, and let's connect again next week.
That's it for this week.
Thanks for listening to the Santon Times Hour. And if you enjoyed it, be sure to share it.